We are joined by a reporter for Fox Sports and Fox Sports One, a national college football insider for The Athletic. He is a New York Times bestselling author. His most recent book is The QB. We are joined by Bruce Feldman. Bruce, always good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. Always good to talk to you.
Great to have you. Now, Bruce, before I get into your annual freaks list, I want to get your sense as to how people around the world of college football reacted when they saw the story, Bruce, involving all the positive tests with the Miami Marlins.
You know, it got a lot of people's attention. Now, some of the ADs in the Power Five we spoke to said, you know what, we expected some of this. But I think the idea that, look, this is a sport in baseball where there's more social distancing in terms of it. It's not like football. You have much smaller rosters. And as a football coach put it to me when he saw this story, it was like, well, you know what? They're professionals. We're not. So the optics aren't great. But hopefully that Major League Baseball can keep having a season. And then I think right now college football is trying at best they can to make a run at having a season as well. But obviously this is one of the things that is on their radar to see how is other sports going to make it work. It's not an apples to apples comparison, but it's definitely something that got people's attention and they're monitoring it.
Bruce Feldman's joining us. I mean, not only are they trying to make the season work still yet, college football, but even some are trying to make it work on time. As you've written, for instance, in the case of Oklahoma and Kansas, they've decided to open up their season against Missouri State and Southern Illinois on August 29th. What was the thinking behind those moves, and does that still make sense at this point?
I think it gives them some added flexibility in terms of what could happen, stretching out a season. It's one more week. So I think that's the thinking behind it. Now, look, I've talked to some ADs and some coaches who are looking at it going, you know what? We feel like we have a little bit of understanding, a better understanding now of how this virus is, how we can manage it a little better. Our players now, after being around the program for close to a month, they probably take it more seriously now because they've seen some of how it can spread, not necessarily in the program, but certainly, you know, a bunch of guys got together and played Madden, or somebody went over to a pool party, and then all of a sudden that's how the cases piled up. And so when you talk to people in a lot of college football, their big concerns are what happens when the rest of the student body comes back and campuses get filled up, and those students probably aren't going to take it as seriously as maybe the people now around college football are. Will there be a surge at that point starting in late August? And I think that's something that is concerning. And also that, you know, I've heard a bunch is it's also you have some older staff and some coaches who could be at risk too. And so I think there's a lot of stuff right now that they're trying to sort out.
We're talking to Bruce Feldman. You know, Bruce, that point about the students and when they return, it was not that long ago that some of the sport were saying that if the students are not on campus, then athletes should not be either, and there should not be sports. In other words, if it's not safe for the students, then it's not safe for the student athletes. Is that, and as you're pointing out, there are people talking about this still yet, is that still the case, or has that been modified a bit, that take?
I think it's been modified some. Look, you can be cynical. You don't have to be too cynical to say, look, sounds like they're moving the goalposts. But I think there's also an element, and I don't think this is insignificant. There's a lot of people in college sports leadership who are going to make the argument and say, look, they're probably more safer in our structure that we have in our college programs than they may be at home in terms of there's a lot of elements to this. It's not so cut and dry. And I think one thing you will hear a lot, probably more, is there's going to be a bunch of places that are going to say, hey, you know what? It's probably better for you to take classes online, not be around as much of the student body. It's not necessarily the closest thing they could probably get to creating their own bubble in college athletics. Now, I don't think every program can have all their college football players take online classes, but I think you will probably see that encouraged by a lot more people, at least inside the program, for that, because I think they're really worried about the risks of being around other students. And it's one of these things where I think, again, the optics of this are not great as you laid it out. And I think right now it's just between the financial impact, and I think there's also a mental health component that if you talk to people inside college athletics that I think is a real thing about not having the structure that comes with it. It's not just, hey, it's all about the money. And no doubt that is a big part of this. But I think there's a lot of stuff that people are trying to sort out. In addition to a lot of the players, they do want to play. And so how do you kind of balance this with a very real problem as a pandemic that they've never dealt with before? Anything like it, quite honestly.
Bruce Feldman's joining us. The Freaks List is out on the Athletic site. I will get to that momentarily. Bruce, what about this notion that, programs obviously are taking steps to minimize contact between players during workouts, but the fact is football is a contact sport. At some point, you're going to have to start making contact with your teammates in practice and opponents during games. How do you expect teams to deal with this?
That is the hardest thing, that's the hardest thing to gauge, because at this point, till Friday, they had only done works out in small groups. Now they're able to do the 20-hour rule kicked in, so they can have up to 6 hours of walkthroughs where they're on a field. Now, most teams are going to have players wear masks. It is not high-speed football. It's walkthroughs, and it's going to be in smaller groups, not necessarily the whole team. But what does that translate to, right? And I think the concern is if you have, let's say, a couple of cases that end up getting inside your program and you have, an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman, they're up against the same player for roughly 3 hours in the app, in a game or however many reps at practice. And that's the way things can spread. It's so hard to predict right now. But I think, again, this is way different than golf and the PGA. And quite honestly, it's way different than MLB because of that nature. Now, the reality is a lot of these cases seem like they have been spread because of guys, people hanging out in more social settings, and it's probably indoors where some of the problems have happened. But I think this is something where, right now, once they get out and do actual football stuff, that is something I've had several coaches go, I don't know what's going to happen when we start doing 9-on-7 drill. There's only so much, you can't really manage social distancing the same way. And so it's, the best right now, the best thing everybody can do is kind of speculate and say what we're going to see and see what happens. And obviously a bunch of other levels of football, whether it's the junior colleges or FCS or, Division II schools have said, that's a risk we're not willing to take.
Bruce Feldman joining me. Bruce, you brought up a really interesting point that I want to ask you about. One last thought about the virus. You've addressed the idea of a backup head coach, the person who would take over if the head coach tests positive for COVID. What is your sense as to how many programs already have that person in place and have already made that decision?
I would say, and we did this story on The Athletic late last week, and I talked to, probably 25% of the staffs about that. And I think there's something in place, but it's not as simple as, that guy's, going to be a head coach down the road or something. It was like, what I had heard a lot of is, what's the best way we can keep everything kind of on track for a 2-week stretch? This is kind of different than if you have an interim head coach taking over at the end of a season or something, where they're saying is like, we want our coordinators to be able to try to at best keep doing their job. Because at some point, you're also going to have a lot of feedback, you would think, even if a head coach is quarantined. It's not like he's going to, it's not like a player who just got ejected from a game for targeting. So I think it's a very different dynamic. And so when you started to pose that question, it was interesting because I had a bunch of coaches, head coaches themselves, who were like, we've thought about it and kind of walked down the road, but it's a new problem to have to figure out. Now, a bunch of them have figured out what their play calling structure is on that side of the ball or on offense or defense or how, there's a little bit of a chain of command. But it's definitely, it's got people thinking in different ways. I'll be honest, after hearing some of the theories on what they think they would do.
Bruce Feldman joining us. All right, Bruce, the very popular Freaks List is out on the Athletic site. The number one player on the list this year is Quiddy Pay, a defensive end from Michigan. What sets him apart from all the other freaks?
Crazy amount of change of direction, Jim. We're talking about a guy who's 271 pounds. And the shuttle times he's put up in their Michigan training system are that of not just a defensive back, but like a super fast defensive back. And this was a guy who when he came to Michigan, had legit track credentials, was a state champion on the 4x100 relay team, won a state long jump title. He was 228 pounds when he showed up in Ann Arbor. Now he's 271. And one of the coaches there told me, remember, they had Rashawn Gary, who was this five-star, you know, great athlete. And they say Quiddy Pay has the best change of direction of any D lineman they've had there in a long time. And so if you're doing something that's even more impressive than Rashawn Gary athletically, that's really saying something.
All right, so number two on the list, Bruce, is Carlos Basham Jr., the defensive end at Wake Forest. And because he plays there, he may not have the national profile of some other guys on that list. So what is it that makes him so special?
So Boogie Basham for Wake Forest, now there's been a lot of big-time D linemen, you know, certainly from NC State and Clemson in the ACC. This is a guy the NFL scouts already really like. Now, he's 280 pounds, and what's crazy about him is, remember, like the original freak, Javon Kearse, was 20 pounds lighter, and this guy moves even better. I mean, that's crazy to say, but a short shuttle time, 4.21, that's faster than Javon Kearse did at 260 pounds. I mean, this guy is a great player on the field, and just ask anybody around the ACC country, and they'll just rave about how good of a player. It's just he's, you know, a lot of ways he's been overshadowed by all the guys Clemson has.
Right, so the way you answered that and the way you mentioned Javon Kearse, it kind of leads me to my next question. You've been doing this list over the years. Are guys getting freakier from year to year, or do the freaks from the early years stack up pretty well with the freaks of 2020?
I think they still do. I mean, you know, Margus Hunt from SMU was a crazy, you know, freakish talent who was this European shot-putting star. I mean, you had guys like Adrian Peterson. Calvin Johnson was the guy I had one of the first years on my list. So those guys translate. I mean, the one thing is occasionally you will see somebody. I have a guy this year on my list, Michael Martinez. He's a tight end from UCLA. He's 6'6", over 260. His hands are so much bigger than the biggest hands anybody's ever had measured at the combine. He has to be on the list, right? So it's like you had DeForest Buckner's hands were over 11 and a half inches, the biggest that they've been measured at the combine. This guy's hands are almost a full inch bigger.
Whoa.
You know, it's just crazy. So occasionally you will get a guy like that who is like, you know, even makes you say, wow, when the other freaks go, wow, that guy's a freak. That's telling you something.
See, that's something else. And that leads me to my final question. I mean, are freaks recruited or are they made? I mean, you can't teach what you just told me, that kind of hand size. But in other words, is the athlete doing the work? But how much of that of showing up on that list is about the strength and conditioning coaches and the programs that they design as opposed to a guy who's just wired for it?
I think it's a combination. Look, Saquon Barkley is blessed in terms of his gifts and his work ethic. But, you know, I had four guys on there. I've never had four players from the same school on the list before till this year. I have four Penn State guys. And part of the reason why is the numbers are eye-popping. But I think another part of that is if you look at what some of the – and Saquon is a good example. If you look at what some of the Penn State players have done, I mean, I've had a bunch of guys on the list before from Penn State in recent years. But then you see what they've done at the NFL Combine, and it's not just Saquon. It was Troy Apke. It was Mike Gesicki. It's been receivers. It's, you know, it's going to be Micah Parsons when he goes through there. It's going to be Jason Owe. It's going to be Journey Brown now. I mean, when you have players who back it up, and I think it helps when they have this competitive environment, and that's certainly a place that has it, where, okay, this is the program we're going to jump into, and then they see it. And I think when you see what a Saquon Barkley is doing, I think that forces everybody else, if they're competitive, to try to compete with it. And so I think that's part of the culture. But certainly, you know, you couldn't just take a man off the street and put him into a program and say, okay, you're going to do everything this guy does as hard as he does, as best you can. I mean, yes, you'll improve, but you're not going to do what some of these guys are doing. And it's just, I think that's what makes them, you know, so different than the average really good athlete.
Such good stuff with Bruce Feldman. He is a reporter for Fox Sports and FS1, a national college football insider for The Athletic. You can see that freaks list on that site. He is a New York Times bestselling author, and remember, his most recent book is The QB. Bruce, great job. Great to have you back. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Me too. Good job, Bruce. Really well done.